Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery on Round Rock, where we talk about games, comics, and other stuff on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And let's go to the show for this week. And it's the Roguecast for Wednesday, March 18th, and we've got a lot of news.
Yes.
Well, we have a lot of updates for the store. We have little news, actually. This will be a quick start this week. So I'm just going to run through the list of stuff that's coming up. We're getting into summer and craziness of stuff going on at the store.
Yep.
So we'll have
Free Comic Book Day.
Lots of events coming, yes. Yep. So first of all, coming up in this Sunday, the 22nd, is our Magic pre-release for Dragons of Tarkir. Still plenty of room to sign up for that.
That's this Sunday. Oh boy, I'd forgotten that.
Yep. That's this Sunday. And then the following Saturday, the 28th, we have a pre-release demo for a game called Double Vision, which I talked about last week. And that's all. That'll cover our March events, and all that detail is on our website and on our Facebook page. And then April is chock full of stuff. Tabletop Day, the big board gaming day is.
Looking at what we've got going on, I'm super excited about it.
Yep, that is Saturday, April 11th. It's got a bunch of stuff on there. Like I say, I mentioned X-Wing last time.
Terror and Meeple City.
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
I forget all of it. There's like, aren't there like six or eight different games?
We're also going to be doing like Star Wars X-Wing, a couple other, that I'm blanking on. But, you know.
Yeah.
We'll have stuff to give away, we'll have demos going on, and there'll be a vibe of celebratory game nature.
Indeed.
It's my birthday, man.
Yeah, whatever.
Then the day after that, the Sunday, April 12th, from 2 to 6, we're going to be demoing a game by, one of our customers has a game that they're putting in production called Cuisine de la Carde that is two rival chefs battling it out.
Oh, that sounds awesome.
And it sounds like fun. And they're going to have their promo for that, that, you know, you can come out and play the demo.
You know, there's a few different games out that are foodie games, at least one of which, Wasabi, I really like.
Yeah.
And I know there's another sushi game, Sushi Go?
Yeah.
That we've been trying to get back in.
Right.
That's supposed to be good. Yeah. So I'm always interested to try a new food-based board game.
I also remember the last sort of local card game we got was Fluffy Bunny Tea Party, which people love.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, that was legit.
So I'm looking forward to this. That'll be the 12th. They'll probably do another one later in the month, too, or later in... they're doing their Kickstarter, so we're going to help them promote that.
Yep.
And then Ladies' Night is going to be moving to Star Coffee for this month, for next month, for April 13th. Reading with Rogues is going to move over to Mesa Rosa for a month.
Yep. We decided we'd go someplace that was maybe had a little bit brighter interior.
Yeah, we'll have a little more lighting and just different food. We're going to try a little variety.
Yeah, and they have a pretty broad Tex-Mex menu.
Yep. And that is on April 14th. And the book we're doing, as mentioned last week, is Birthright, which we all love.
Yep. Yay. Big restock of that hitting this week.
Gaming with Rogues will be on the 20th. Have not settled on whether or not that's going to change to Mesa Rosa that week or it's going to stay at BJ's. We'll let you know on that. But they're going to be doing Settlers of Catan or Star Trek Catan. We haven't decided yet. And then, of course, closing out our events, May 2nd will be Free Comic Book Day.
We do have a bunch of stuff.
That's a lot. There's a lot coming up.
When is sleepy times?
Well, in Free Comic Book, you don't get sleepy times. There are no sleepy times. There's just Free Comic Book Day, which is going to be amazing.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun.
And there's just going to be a lot of... I mean, the big two are putting out their big books. I mean,
yep.
You have Secret Wars, number zero, which Marvel is going to be putting out. They're also going to be putting out, Uncanny... Inhumans?
I think that's right.
It's like an Inhumans book and also the Avengers. They're like two different little mini stories.
They're doing their little cheater. Oh, okay, but it's going to be in one
comic. It's in one comic. One comic. And then DC has got...
DC's got Convergence, and I don't remember what their other one is.
But I think it's like a 8-page previews of a bunch of the new books that they're about to debut.
Yep.
Which is going to be interesting.
So basically these books are the gateways to the whole next year of both of those.
Yeah, pretty much.
Both of those companies.
And then, of course, there's a flood of stuff from other companies, too. There's just a ton of good stuff. Things. So, yeah, that'll be fun. And then, of course, we'll be announcing, as always, our all-ages event on that day.
Hey, just out of curiosity, have we done, like, a thing where we kind of go down the lineup of Free Comic Book Day stuff?
We have not. We should do that when we get a little closer.
But it is coming.
Yep.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying. We still got a few weeks. So
yeah,
when we
get a little closer, we will give you the Rogue's Guide to Free Comic Book Day.
Yep.
All right, so moving on to the scant bit of news we have this week. The first bit is a little casting news. It sounds like they're looking at possibly Dominic Cooper for AMC's Preacher for Jesse Custer.
Yep.
Dominic Cooper, who, of course, plays Howard Stark.
Right.
I can see that.
Yeah, I can see that, too. He's got the kind of necessary snark.
Yeah.
I don't have any opinion on it one way or the other.
Jesse needs to be a good old boy. I don't know if he can play that, but I feel like I like Dominic Cooper. I could see it working.
Yeah. I mean, I'm neither here nor there that I actually...
Which weird is it, like, I mean, he's a good old boy, but he's not, like, backwoods.
No.
He's, like, kind of like too. A young good old boy. Yeah. And, yeah, who has somehow also been through, like, seminary.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm still not convinced that there needs to be a, you know, preacher.
I'm not either.
Out of curiosity, Nick, you say that. If this had been an HEP... If this had been an HBO... And like, say you had your dream casting or whatever, do you think it would fare better?
I think it would probably fare better on a
like, network. Do you think it inherently doesn't resist it? Or do you think that if somebody did, like, a more exact translation...
I just think some of the more mature themes that are actually going on in Preacher, be it the cussing and the sort of...
Hyper-violence
that lend itself so well to the story,
yeah.
And it's going to get cut. I mean, I don't know how
right,
much.
But again, like, what if, like, HBO was doing that where they could more or less show it?
I would much more
yeah, so it's like HBO. It sounds like this particular iteration
may not AMC do version, it well. Even though what they're able to get away with in Walking Dead via
and,
violence.
And Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul. I mean, AMC's got a pedigree. It's just, like you say, this seems like a book that needs to be, a show that needs to be profane. It needs to be on HBO.
Yeah.
And they're going to really have to prove themselves, yeah. I think, to win the fans over.
That said, I do think they could pull it off.
They could.
Just having based on how well Better Call Saul's done and how Walking Dead has sort of won me over.
Do you think it's going to be very different from the comic?
I don't. I think they'll get away with a lot of it. I think they'll probably play down some of the more outrageous stuff that Garth Ennis did, which honestly might make Preacher a stronger story.
What I hope for the show is that with Walking Dead, we've seen it go back and forth and have its major ups and downs. Mainly because different showrunners have come on and had their own different blend. I would like to see a constant person behind Preacher.
Well, it is sort of one big story
instead
ultimately,
of, oh, that guy's not working so well. So
it would make sense to have a vision right from the get-go.
Well, keep in mind, Nick, this is your people. This is the neighbor's people.
I know, this is the neighbor's people. And
they did This Is the End, which is very much of a piece with what Preacher does.
Yeah, I hope they stick with it, and I hope that AMC, the people who... Because they've notoriously gotten involved in, things and kind of screwed over a lot of shows.
Yeah, it's true.
And I would like to see them back away and maybe give these people a little bit more free reign.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a possibility.
You know, of all the toned-down stuff that they're going to have to do for AMC... The language thing seems the weirdest, because that is like the most foul-mouthed language, comic of
But you know what? How important is it, really?
But the profanity kind of is the point sometimes. You know, he's a man of God, so what can you do but be wildly profane?
I think as long as he's sort of an ass-kicker, basically.
Yeah.
You could, if he's like Daryl...
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, that's who I would have cast as Jesse Custer.
That's interesting.
If he's like Daryl and is sort of a badass, swaggering badass...
Yeah.
Then I think that will work. I don't think you need the cursing. I do think it's going to be a very different show, but Walking Dead is a very different show, and I think that for the most case, that's a benefit.
For whatever reason, I agree with that, but the language, I mean, I guess Garth Ennis is known for being kind of exploitational guy, so I feel like that the language is a bigger thing for him.
He got away with it in Hitman and made it that much
greater. Yeah, but that was it was a big tongue-in-cheek thing to have all the fake swear.
Yeah. I don't know. I think, I mean, obviously, the ideal here would be to have Quentin Tarantino doing it for HBO.
Right.
That's the pitch. That's the dream casting. Yeah. But that was never going to happen.
No.
So, yeah, I'm inclined to give it a shot. I'm more excited
There's no way I thought
I would.
I'm going to watch the pilot.
Yeah.
AMC is far from the worst place it could be.
Yeah. Yeah. Any of the networks would be the
CBS?
Worst place. Any of the networks would not be able to do it.
Right. And they may, you know, like you say, you know, Breaking Bad has gotten away with so much.
Yeah.
And Garth Ennis, it is sometimes his detriment, you know, the kind of cheap laughs he goes for.
Yeah.
So if they rein it in a little bit, it actually could end up a better piece.
What year did Preacher start? Out of curiosity.
1994.
Sure. Sounds in that ballpark.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Tonight, there is a bunch of new shows. And when I say tonight, I mean yesterday, because you're listening to this on Wednesday.
Right.
But if you travel back in time.
As a dutiful listener, of course, I know that you get in at 8 o'clock on a Wednesday morning and listen to our podcast.
Oh, yeah?
This is the second you can find it.
You walk in and you say, it is time.
It is time.
And then you press buttons until it comes
then
on.
Then you put on the rogue helmet and the raiments.
And the rogue glasses.
And the rogue glasses, and you listen to our podcast.
Rogue
dutifully,
style.
Right? That's how everybody listens, right?
Yeah.
Pretty sure.
The only way to do it.
Okay. But there were several premieres. iZombie.
Yes.
The new, loosely based on the comic.
It's loosely based on what? Chris Roberson and Mike Allred.
A comic for Vertigo about a girl zombie who works at like a cemetery.
She works in a morgue.
A morgue, yes.
And she can, if she eats brains, she gets the experience of the person who died. And she, when she eats brains, she doesn't become full zombie. She doesn't go, like, full rar zombie.
I think what has me most excited for the show, and that's why I've set up my DVR to record the entire series, is if I'm not wrong, it's Rob Thomas, right?
It's Rob Thomas and Diane Ruggiero, who ran Veronica Mars.
Which I think is a huge, I mean, a fantastic pedigree.
That's why I'm excited, too.
So, I mean, I don't know much about it other than the few, like, 15-second snippets I've seen. Yeah. But it looks fun.
I know that some of the Allred wacky weirdness stuff, like having a were-terrier and a ghost roommate, is not in there.
Right.
Which is kind of a shame because it was fun. But I understand that this is more of a... Basically, she uses her little gifts to fight crime, which is sort of a TV thing.
It's a procedural.
Yeah.
But,
is it a procedural?
More or less. Every episode, she'll eat some brains and they'll solve the crime.
Right.
Yeah.
But you never expected to say those
wacky
words.
Kurt
Busiek, who's known to be a fairly level-headed guy, apparently got a screener copy of this.
Yeah.
And he's been talking it up a bit.
Yeah, I think
he
liked
really
it.
Happy with it.
I'm looking forward to it.
I don't know what his taste is like in TV, but in the comic business, he seems like a level-headed guy.
His TV taste is pretty good.
Okay.
And I say this as a TV snob. I'm looking forward to it. Also tonight, Flash returns.
Yep.
And I know that there's some big stuff. I don't know how much you guys know, but there's some big stuff tonight.
I generally don't know
that's good.
What's coming up.
That's the best way to be. And then Arrow is next week is tomorrow, and looking forward to that because there was a big.
As you're hearing this today.
Today,
yes,
yeah.
There was some big stuff.
There's a big question looming.
Yeah.
And then of course, Community season 6 started.
Right.
That is on Yahoo Screen.
Yeah, it's so bizarre. I mean,
I have an Apple TV, so I can watch it through my TV.
I guess they really are going to get 6 seasons, and whether or not they get a movie,
they get 6 seasons. But it's funny because like half the cast is left.
Oh, has it?
Yeah, because Joel McHale is there.
Yeah,
but I believe that Shirley.
Yeah,
she's gone.
Okay.
She had to leave. Donald Glover's not there. Chevy Chase isn't there. Danny Pudi's still in there.
Yeah, and Britta.
Britta's still there, and Annie's still there. But they've lost some people.
They have. They've done well with replacing them.
Yeah,
I thought
yeah.
though in the 5th season or the last.
Yeah, when they lost Chevy Chase, they replaced him.
They replaced him with a fantastic actor, which I'm blanking on his name.
Oh, me too. And it's Mike from Breaking Bad.
Yeah,
but he's out because he's doing Better Call Saul, so he's not in it. So yeah, it's another relaunch for Community.
Mike from Breaking Bad is in Better Call Saul?
No. Yes.
Different character?
No, same character. Better Call Saul's a prequel.
Yeah, no, but I thought that I wouldn't have associated. I thought that Saul showed up on that show for the first time and didn't know Mike, or did he?
No, he knew Mike. Mike was his investigator.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. But Mike from Breaking Bad is also on
Later seasons are very hazy in my mind, so.
Yep. So, yeah. There's a lot of good TV to watch.
There really is.
All right. We are going to take a break, and then we'll be back in just a few seconds with our reader question of the week. It's reader question time, and gentlemen, we have gone international.
Whoa.
We have a question here from a guy who, and I'm deeply sorry for how I'm going to mispronounce your name. We're guessing Bane Jokic could be Bane.
Yeah.
He's also asked a question on my TV Dudes podcast. I know he says that he's been listening for a while. He discovered us listening to the Spill podcasts and, sort of from there. He grew up reading lots of comics, mostly European, as he's from Europe, mostly Italian and French comics, and some from his country, the former Yugoslavia. He says, U.S. comics back in the 80s were DC and Marvel that we can read now with digital distribution. There's much more to discover. And he says he finds Image Comics to be the best publisher right now, which I'd agree with.
I haven't quite thought about the digital revolution and how it might affect
overseas.
People outside of the U.S.
Yeah.
And maybe make things more accessible. I don't know if people in the U.S. are particularly going after comics from, say, Europe, but I would assume that they also have digital options.
I would assume so, too. I don't actually know.
I don't know.
Oh, well, there is a lot of French and European stuff on Comixology.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is available through our web, our Rogues Gallery web store, by the way.
Yes, indeed. Yes.
So, he says he still reads a lot of DC and Marvel, really enjoys New Inhumans, Miles Morales, Hawkeye, and he wants to read She-Hulk. He says, anyway, To make a long story short, I want to know your suggestion on what to read from Marvel so I can be ready for the upcoming Secret Wars. I was thinking I'd only read Avengers from the beginning, the one that started back in 2012, not New Avengers or Avengers Assemble or Uncanny Avengers or Avengers World. There are too many Avengers comics. Do you think Avengers will be enough for me to jump in to follow the story of Secret Wars, or do you guys have something else or anyone who wants to stay in touch with the Marvel comic book universe?
So I feel like, Nick, you have the most insight into what is going on in the Avengers books right now.
Take it away.
Well, first, do we not know? This might be Bane asking this question. It could be.
When you have told me if I can read Avengers, then you have my permission to die.
There we go.
I'm deeply sorry.
Honestly, he's not wrong. Avengers is one of the key books if you want to get ready for Secret Wars. I would say Avengers and New Avengers are the books to read.
Do you need to read both?
Yes, because both of them are dealing with different aspects of the same thing.
Okay.
They're both building up to problems that will inherently now, cause this.
Right, and we know that there's something
fracture.
Like about, like, you know, world, like another, an alter Earth merging with our own or something like
well,
that,
it's
or multiple Earths.
Hickman set up with, you know, issue one, sort of this, basically the multiverse breaking apart and sort of ramming into each other, causing these, what they're called, like, convergences, where...
Well, he's copyrighted that.
I'm going shorthand. Maybe that's not...
No, it's basically, it's just more of a crisis on Infinite Worlds.
Yes, exactly.
It's a world crammer.
It's a countdown to the end of the Marvel Universe.
And there are different characters that they've utilized, people from, like, the new universe, and a few new characters, like the World Builders, and... I can't remember their names,
but I like the different factions involved, and also revealed something about like the major threat, which I won't go into because it's. But there are like spoilers out there.
There are pretty big spoilers. There's a lot of really big spoilers. So don't read those. Just go read Avengers and New Avengers.
That's right. Spoiler blackout.
It is a long con because Hickman really does write these pretty long stories.
Long con.
Okay, long con is the wrong thing to say.
It's more like a Dostoevsky novel.
Here's my question to you, Nick. Do you believe that you need to read Avengers to read Secret Wars? Do you think it'll be a jump-on point?
I think they'll make Secret Wars accessible.
Okay.
So I don't think you necessarily need to. If you want to sort of see what was the preamble for it...
And it sounds like our listener question... Yeah. Listener does.
He wants to read, more.
Yeah, and I those are the books I'd suggest.
Those two. Anything else?
In the Marvel Universe, there's a bunch of great stuff.
Yeah, but anything like particular, if he's wanting to jump in with Secret Wars, like anything else that's leading up to it?
No.
Fantastic Four isn't really...
No, they're really not... They're dealing with their own stuff, honestly.
It seems
like
it's pretty much Hickman's books.
But, in the Avengers, New Avengers, you're going to get Reed Richards. You kind of get the melding of the Marvel Universe in those books because they've become sort of melding.
And then, Uncanny Avengers, Secret Avengers, all those are sort of off to the side.
They're off to the side. Remender's doing his own thing. Okay. Those are the books you need to read for Secret Wars.
And also, we would all, of course, recommend Ms. Marvel. And I'm sure there's some others. Storm.
But just in general?
Just in general, yeah. There's lots of good stuff.
Well, you mentioned She-Hulk, which has met its end, but is a great book, so read the 12 issues.
Punisher. S.H.I.E.L.D.
S.H.I.E.L.D.
We already said Daredevil.
Daredevil,
Black Widow.
Yeah.
There's just
a lot of good stuff from Marvel right now.
Dave and I were talking about this. Phil Noto has done 16 issues, no delays.
No breaks, plus a cover month.
Plus a cover month, and that's amazing, and he's... There have been fantastic issues. I was just very surprised by that.
Yeah.
Any artist doing 16 issues in a row without a guest artist is kind of shocking.
Yeah.
The fact that Noto's art is painterly, whether it's digital or not, but it looks painted, makes it that much more impressive.
Yeah.
His machine.
But hopefully that is
one of those AI that Stephen Hawking's warning us about.
Hopefully that has answered your question. I won't try to pronounce your name. I'm sorry.
Thank you for your question. Unfortunately, the former Republic of Yugoslavia is a little bit outside our range to send a packet of comics. But if you would like to ask us a question, you can send it to roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. And if we read a question on the air, you will get a bonus pack of comics here in the store.
Yeah, I guess if you can make it to the store, we can get you the comics.
That's right. Exactly. That's the deal. Thanks for your question, Bane or Bonnet. And we'll be back in just a few seconds to talk about comics for the week. We are talking comics for the week of Wednesday, March 18th, and it is another sort of big week.
It is.
Lots of stuff.
I don't think we're going to see small weeks anymore.
I'm sure we'll see them again, but right now, we're like I said, we're in that leading up to summer, so everybody's starting to put up...
I'm kidding.
DC's closing out their pre-convergence run. Marvel is leading up to Secret Wars, and all the indie guys are launching a ton of stuff, and spring is blooming, and I guess that's a thing.
Sure.
So
if it means more good comics for us.
So Nick, I know that we're all big Mark Millar fans here.
Yeah.
And if you hear that laughter, it's because we're all not big Mark Millar fans here.
You know, he's kind of like Bendis. At one time or another, all of us have...
We always liked him, yeah.
...flirted with him, or like, I remember, I flirted with him at a convention, little footsie under the table.
Sure.
Scottish style.
Yep.
You know, but I think the first thing I knew that he did was Ultimate X-Men. That was probably the first thing that was on my radar. Although I know he had done like probably Authority or something before that.
He did Authority. That's where I liked Authority.
But I didn't know him from that. Yeah. Oh, and you know, I'd read his Superman Adventures comics, which were his one.
Oh, Superman Adventures is great.
Weirdly straightforward, all ages.
And
stuff.
I read his Ultimate X-Men and I think Ultimate FF. That's sort of the
Ultimate FF was Warren Ellis to start.
But he was
collaborating or something. Yeah.
I thought it was like Bendis.
Was it Bendis and Millar started, and then Ellis took over?
And Ellis took over.
You're right.
I was like, I was pretty sure.
You're right.
Anyway,
I'm sorry.
Like some of that early stuff, but I think it's fairly early on in his Ultimate X-Men run. I was like, there's something going on here. And then when Ultimates came out, for me, although a lot of people really liked Ultimates, it kind of sealed the deal that he wasn't for me in the sense that his stuff always seemed to have kind of a.
Well, there's a very cynical edge to it.
Yeah.
Like, and he's trying to sort of subvert everything in it. Yeah.
Well, and there's there's a disdain for the characters that I think that always sort of came through for us.
Right.
And there's also sort of a disdain for readers that shows up in something like the notorious ending for Wanted or...
Right. And he's done, like, a couple endings like that. What was his, Chosen?
Yeah.
Not that it was like, it's more like he just wants to smack you in the face in the last page.
But here's the thing about Moore, and he does come up with interesting concepts.
Yeah, and he's been very successful with movies and that kind of thing.
I mean, he's basically turned his comics into sort of this like brainchild.
I guess what I was wanting to set up is that we are not fans. This book had a pretty high bar to clear.
And yes. This book is called...
Well, no, hold on. We're not fans, but you... Read Starlight.
And I liked it quite a bit.
And you kept saying how good it was.
It was.
And I was like, I don't know if I can really believe this. And I'm still, based on that recommendation, I am going to go try it.
Also, he does work with a lot of great artists. Like, Starlight was with Gordon Parlov, and Kick Ass was with John Romita Jr., and Secret Service with Lithodale Francis Yu.
Jupiter's Legacy is Frank Quitely.
He gets a lot of good artists to work with him.
But this book is called Chrononauts. It's the first issue. It's him. He's working with artist Sean Murphy.
Who you might know from Joe the Barbarian. The Wake.
Punk Rock Jesus.
The Wake, right?
The Wake, yes. And this book focuses on time travel. And sort of the notion of NASA creating this ability to sort of see into the future or see into the past and sort of record it digitally.
Yeah.
And it takes that idea and kind of runs with it.
Yeah.
And sort of focuses on two characters that are sort of the inventors behind the technology. Yeah.
And they're buddies. They're like adoptive brothers, basically. They're not really brothers, but their friends were so close.
And
they're
one,
brothers,
the, sort of
brothers from another mother.
Brothers from another mother.
One's kind of grounded in sort of his work, and one is the sort of genius hothead that reminds me so much of Johnny Storm. And
so Johnny Storm's not a genius.
Well, no, but it's sort of the archetype.
If Johnny Storm was a time travel inventor.
Okay.
Well, right, if Johnny Storm was actually a little bit more intelligent.
But yeah, I get that too. He does have that
does
look
have
that and that
kind
feel.
Of hothead, everything is awesome, everything I do is the best there ever is.
Right.
And sort of just the kind of back and forth between the two characters is very fun.
Yep.
And I actually like the glimpse of technology and sort of the ideas behind it.
He did a really good job world building on this.
He did. And sort of seeing glimpses of the past is very interesting. Now, there is an overarching story and things do occur in it.
Right.
But that's sort of just kind of the glimpse that I want to give about the story. I mean, the art is beautiful. Sean Murphy is always good. He gives a level of detail to everything. There's a picture. I mean, you can tell sometimes artists by the way they draw sort of like cars or planes or something like that, and just the intricate level of detail that he puts in without making it feel like completely like a photograph is amazing. And I love it. The art is fantastic. I thought the story was a lot of fun.
And the other thing is, time travel stuff can get confusing sometimes.
It can.
This didn't have a lot of that weird paradox, confusing stuff. It was a pretty straightforward story.
It was very straightforward, and I felt like that was sort of a breath of fresh air.
Yeah.
He's waiting to slap you on the last issue.
That's what I thought all through reading Starlight.
Yeah.
And Starlight had a great ending.
But I mentioned this to you guys, and I think Randy agreed with me a little bit, is that he's kind of toned down a little bit of the Malaras.
A little bit.
And I kind of keep my fingers crossed a little bit that it stays that way. Because I do think he has shown himself to be an interesting idea man.
Yeah.
Now, not always with execution
He's got the ability to be a good writer. It's just that some of his tics can get really annoying.
Yeah. It's not quite the same thing, but he's a little bit like Garth Ennis in the sense that his sort of more juvenile antics and his more exploitational elements that he tends to bring into things subvert what is some stronger craft and idea that he does seem to have.
And I'm not sure what issue 2 will bring, but I thought this first issue was fantastic. So
yeah,
I really, really recommend it.
For my part, there were 2 number ones I really liked this week. I'm going to talk about one of them.
Cheater.
I'm going to talk about one of them. And
I had to say 2.
But there were 2. But the one I want to talk about is Frankenstein Underground number 1. It's by Mike Mignola and Ben Stenbeck. Is that right?
That's correct.
And it's a Dark Horse book. It is it's a new story, but it is very. It's in the continuity with Hellboy and BPRD.
It's steeped into the continuity. Yeah, I mean
the Hellboy verse.
Hellboy shows up in a panel.
He does,
and the bad guy is someone from one of the BPRD runs.
Is it
Frankenstein's monster from the novel?
It is
Frankenstein's monster, and he is. This is kind of like what DC did with him. Where basically, and what was it? Steve Scroche did when he did Frankenstein.
No.
He did one, too.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
But they do this one where basically Frankenstein goes out and becomes sort of an adventurer type.
Right.
So they go through and they show that he's been through all these things. He's been hunted. He's been a hunter. He is not like an adventurer so much, but he has been around. Like, this takes place in the modern day, I believe. And so they go through and they show him being this old witch woman, and he tells her about his travails and sort of he is sort of on the run and trying to figure out who he is. And there are people coming after him for his power. It's a really fun take on Frankenstein. It is not unlike what he's doing with Hellboy, where Hellboy is he's a fun two-fisted fighter, but he's also a guy who's got a little angst in his backstory. It reminds me a lot of that, of the early Hellboy stuff. It's gorgeous to look at.
Who is the
Ben Stenbeck?
Ben Stenbeck. Okay. And he's got a very Mignola-esque style.
Yeah.
But I really like this. You don't have to read Hellboy to read it. In fact, you could jump right in.
I've sort of fallen off Hellboy, not for lack of quality, but just because I like it.
There's
a mood,
so much
mood sort of thing, and there is a lot. But I like Frankenstein.
Yeah, I would definitely recommend this both to people who are enjoying all the Hellboy and BPRD. This is very much a part of it. But if you've always been curious about that, or if you just like Frankenstein, this is a really good book that stands on its own.
Oh yeah, I completely agree.
So I was not expecting to like it as much as I did, and I really liked it. Dave, I know you got an oldie but a goodie for us here this week.
Yes. Yeah, of the number ones I've read this week, nothing has quite grabbed me enough to jump to the top of my stack, but I did very much enjoy the 3rd issue of The Unbeatable Squirrel Girl, which by its cover seems to have won an award from ComicsAlliance.com, which is always a fun site, and I'm guessing Chris Sims must have given it this award. It's the Nuts About That Booty Award.
Either Chris Sims or David Uzumaki.
Yeah, somebody, one of those guys reviewing it must have used that phrase. Because she does indeed have junk in the trunk, although I believe in the first issue, it's her tail stuffed in there.
Yep.
But they ran with it and kept it and actually made like a little logo for the award.
That's nice.
The issue itself picks up after it follows the 2nd issue where she is preparing for the arrival of Galactus on Earth and has stolen a suit from Iron Man so she can go and stop him on the moon before he gets there. And in this particular issue, Iron Man villain Whiplash decides to tangle with her because Iron Man's his enemy. He wants to either hurt Iron Man through killing her or just kill her just because it's a thing he does.
Yep.
Even though she explains, I seriously have like 0 time to be fighting Whipman in the forest. I don't know why he didn't get it. Anyway,
call him Whipman?
There's all yes, she does.
Calls him Whipman.
There's also a bank robbery, which I thought was hilarious.
She takes out. She's trying to explain the Galactus threat. Yeah. To him. She's like, if you don't let me go, all of us will die. And she takes out her little Galactus trading card that explains who he is.
Yeah.
And he whips it in half, and she goes, "Oh my gosh, you did not just do that! Oh my gosh!" And then she attacks him. And start speaking squirrel language.
Sure, like you
anyway,
do.
Anyway, the absurdity of the series continues. She does form giant squirrel armor
yep.
in it,
yep.
Made up of like hundreds of squirrels sort of forming an armor around her.
Yep.
It's just as ridiculous as it's been, but you know, continues that sense of strong sense of ridiculous and cartoonish timing. You know, I feel like anybody who likes sort of like the current era of it, of cartoons like Adventure Time and stuff like that is going to like Squirrel Girl.
Well, it's written by Ryan North, who was on Adventure Time, the comics for a
I
long
keep
time.
Forgetting
yeah.
that. There's
that's because you're in love with Erica Henderson's art.
I am. I totally
and I am too.
On the letters page, there's a little baby that sent in a picture from one of the readers, and he has a shirt that says "Nuts Over
Dave,
You."
Dave, babies can't take pictures.
There's a baby selfie camera, I'm sure. anyway, nothing particularly special to report about this other than it is another triumphant issue.
Continues to be one of your favorite new books.
Yep. And the cartooning is just as big a part of it.
Yeah,
I feel
it's
like
great.
Who is the cartoonist?
Erica Henderson.
Erica Henderson, yeah. Her caricatures, her facial expressions, like they just make me laugh on their own. Like when Squirrel Girl gets all feisty and she's got her like game on face,
yeah,
it's kind of hysterical.
Yeah,
and there is a giant squirrel suit, so there's
sure,
that.
There's that.
So anyway, that's my pick.
All right, it is a relatively big week for me. I'm going to run down a few of the other things in my stack. There's several trades. Miss Marvel Volume 2, which I'm excited to go through. Lazarus Volume 3, which is a great read.
I'm for sure going to be reading that.
And Master Keaton Volume 2, which is Urasawa, Nick Urasawa doing the art. I read the first volume of that and really liked it, so I'm looking forward to Volume 2. As a result of me buying it, we don't have it on the shelf. We will next week. And
please inquire if you are interested.
Similarly, Amanda snapped up our last copy, so we won't have it for the shelf until next week. But the book Sex Castle from Image, which is a indie-style riff on 80s action movies, is really fun and outrageous. Also in single issues, the new Boom Book Giant Days was a lot of fun, and I definitely recommend it to Lumberjanes fans. I liked Princess Leia number 2 quite a bit and wish it was an ongoing. I like Batgirl number 40, the end of that story arc. Legends of Baldur's Gate number 5 is a great end to a story arc. And finally, Superior Spider-Man Volume 3 hardcover comes out this week, and I can finally read the last bit of Superior Spider-Man I never read before.
It's really good.
So I'm looking forward to that. Nick, what else is on your stack? Because I know there's some stuff that also I didn't mention.
There was. Silk number 2.
Yeah.
Dear God, that book is great.
Yep.
It really, really is. I continue to love it.
Wait, hold on, back up.
What?
No, what is it? I was just curious. What is it about Silk that you're really liking?
Like, I think it's
like,
just the character.
Like, what stands out about
it? I think it's just the character, the way the stories are told, mm-hmm. and sort of the done-in-one tales, but there's this overarching story that continues,
mm-hmm.
and the art.
You said, would you say it's your favorite of the various Spider-Man tie-in lunch?
It's second favorite to Spider-Woman, which I really, really love.
Oh, just curious.
And it's my second favorite to Spider-Gwen, I think, but it's close. All of those are right up there with me, so.
Then the one-shot, the Batgirl Endgame, which is tying into sort of the Batman Endgame, where Joker has sort of weaponized gas that have taken over the...
All of Gotham, right?
All of Gotham, and sort of, these are how the superheroes are sort of dealing with it.
There's going to be a series of one-shots?
Yeah, it is.
Each showing how, like, the various Bat family are dealing with this.
I think we're getting, what, the Detective Comics back in?
Yeah, we're getting Detective Comics back in this week. And
there's Batgirl this week, and I think, like, one or two more
There's
next
one or two
week.
More.
It's sort of a mega-scale crisis for
Gotham
City.
So, curiosity, Nick, would you recommend this to people who are just reading Batgirl? It is Cameron Stewart and Brendan Fletcher. It's just a different artist. And the art's great.
Yeah,
that was really good when I was looking at it.
The art by Ben Gile, which is just beautiful.
It's really nice.
And the interesting thing about this issue is that it's a silent issue.
Yeah.
And it's usually the words that are used in it are sort of texting. and sort of that kind of method of
emojis.
That's not like the gimmick for all of the tie-ins to
it's just this one.
No, it's just this one because I think that's what Cameron Stewart and Brendan Fletcher like to bring to the table is using that.
It's certainly been a part of the Batgirl regular.
It's a very... I actually thought it was a very good read. It's one of my favorite issues of Batgirl.
Can you call it a read if there's no word?
Yes, actually you can.
More of a picture skim.
Yeah, I actually thought it was a great little story about how Batgirl was dealing with the problem. Then there's the Dodsons are drawing a new book called Red One for Image.
Writing and drawing, right? Or they have a writer?
No, Xavier Dorison is writing it. And then it's sort of about kind of a KGB superhero.
Yeah.
That is sponsored and put into the U.S.
Yeah. Is it Cold War era?
It is right? Cold War.
It's like 80s.
Yeah, it is Cold War era.
It looks mildly cheesecakey.
A little bit.
It is a little bit cheesecakey, a little bit tongue in cheek, but it also has some very serious
Terry Dodson's
themes.
Brand of cheesecakey is, I think, much more approachable than some other artists.
Yeah,
where you're kind of like, this kind of makes me feel like.
This reminded me in some ways of Howard Chaykin's American Flag stuff.
Mm-hmm. It's a little less serious, I think.
Well, that's the kind of satirical edge as well. Yeah.
The second issue of Rafael Albuquerque's book 8 comes out this week.
Crazy time travel and beautiful art.
Which I'm excited to see. Gabriel Hardman, one of my favorite, a very talented artist who's done things like Red Hulk and a few other books that I'm just blanking on.
But he wrote a graphic novel called Kinski, which is about a guy
and
a dog.
I forgot about that.
And so this is his second foray into writing with a different artist.
Yeah, and this is called Invisible Republic, which I'm curious about.
It's a big sci-fi epic, it looks like.
Yeah, the art by, is it Karina Bachingo?
Yeah, it's really nice looking.
Beautiful. I'm very curious about it.
I would say
it.
if you checked out Descender, you might want to give Invisible Republic a look. It's that same sort of sweeping sci-fi.
And I know nothing about this other than it's a new Dark Horse book, and Dark Horse has been kind of on a roll a little bit.
Yep.
So this one is called Shaper,
yep.
Which looks sort of fantasy, sci-fi-esque, because it's got really fun art.
By a bunch of creators we don't know.
Right. But, you know, sometimes Dark Horse surprises you. And I think that is actually all that's in my stack, other than, you know, a few books that you guys have already mentioned.
Dave?
The only thing I would add to that has not been mentioned is the, from IDW, is their Fly comic. That is the Fly as in the movie with Jeff Goldblum and Geena Davis.
Yep.
This is I believe it's a sequel of sorts to the movie that will follow up on that. Since that ended rather poorly for Jeff Goldblum, I'm not quite sure how this is going to work out. But
who wrote this? Is this Brian Seifert?
It's Brian Seifert from Witch Doctor. Yeah.
Brandon
Seifert.
Oh, Brandon Seifert, sorry. Yep. But it is Witch Doctor.
And the art is by Menton 3.
The other thing, Dave, that I thought you might mention is Storm number 9.
Oh, I thought you covered that one.
I did not.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Storm number 9, which teams her with Gambit.
Yep.
In a sort of... Indiana Jones Tomb Raider-esque adventure,
yep.
Which was a really fun idea. Of course, everybody, if you're a Storm fan, you know that she was a thief as a kid.
Yeah.
And who's the writer? I can't.
Greg Pak.
Greg Pak, who's always seemed to be well aware of the best stuff in her history.
Yeah.
Had the smart idea of teaming her with Gambit. The what do they call it?
Well, you remember that she's the one who met Gambit in the first. That's
where he first.
Yeah.
I've never met the early Gambit.
No, Gambit met her when she'd been turned into a little girl. And she's the one who brought him in the X-Men. They've always had a relationship.
Yep.
Okay, so that's new to me.
Yeah.
And I just figured this was kind of the... I mean, I assume that they had done some version of this in the past, but I just thought it was the obvious teaming of the team's two thieves.
Yeah. No, they have a relationship going back. And this is, again, Greg Pak gets the character. This is a fun... This is what I wanted to see of Gambit and Storm. They're talking about him being head of the Thieves Guild and her being head of the X-Men and how neither one of them wants to be, you know, the leaders, and they like to have some fun. And
see, I like this Gambit better than the skeevy guy picking up chicks at Burning Man.
I kind of liked that one, too.
In X-Men.
He can be both people.
He can be both Gambits. Gambit contains multitudes.
From sleazy Gambit to thief Gambit, he's got it all.
All Gambits. All Gambits represent. All Gambits go to heaven. All Gambits go to Burning Man. All right. That about wraps it up for this week. It's another big week. We'll be back in just a few seconds to talk about some movies and video games and stuff. So, Dave, I don't know if you recall, we had a mission – and an expedition this weekend.
You're talking about our Sojourn.
Yes, our Sojourn.
Our Meat Sojourn.
Our Quest.
Meat Quest.
Yes, Meat Quest.
Meat Quest 2015.
So we went down to Franklin Barbecue, which is nationally famous, possibly world famous barbecue in Austin.
You know, when I've mentioned this to some people who haven't had it before, yeah, the reaction is often, why would you do that? Because they know of its reputation.
That was somewhat your reaction, I thought. I thought you were a little skeptical of this.
I was skeptical of it. I'd had it before and I knew it was good.
Yeah.
But anyway, just to finish the sentence, you got to wait in line for like 3 hours there.
Yes.
And that's just how it is at Franklin.
Yeah.
And you'd think, you know, as they make more money, that they might change it up so that, you know, people could actually get the food that they want.
Yeah.
But they haven't.
Nope.
And they're like super famous. They're in all the newspapers and magazines and stuff.
They've shown up in movies.
Well, they were in Chef, notably. Yeah. Well, the thing is, they've talked about their process. It takes like 14 hours to smoke all the brisket and that kind of thing. They literally can't do more without possibly affecting the quality.
Right. Okay.
And so that's why the wait. That's why. I mean, I'm sure that to some extent it is a business model. Like, they enjoy having the, you know, they're never going to get stuck with anything.
No.
But there's been interviews where they ask them about it, and what they say is, you know, we cook literally as much as we can possibly cook.
Can't get more smokers and more meat.
And more people to do it. I mean, you need everybody to have the same skill.
They'll be making so much more revenue.
Yeah, but everybody's got the same level of skill.
So, yeah, that's true.
So that's the trick. I think that's basically a worry about compromising the quality.
I was skeptical in the sense that I'm simply not the foodie you are.
Yep.
So I was like, I mean, I like barbecue.
Sure.
But, like, you know, unless I was just, like, starving hungry, you know, I wouldn't necessarily think I want to make a big trip out there, but a trip did sound fun. It sounded like it'd be a fun experience, and it was.
And we took our good friend Buddy, who is not done Franklin, really wanted to.
Yeah.
And so we got
Buddy,
down there.
Was the dad of one of our former
staffers.
Former staffers.
And we took a little card table and we set up and we sat in line and we played Winter Carcassonne.
Yeah, we threw down on some Carcassonne, representing the games. Had some interesting some people coming up to comment on it, and some South by Southwesters out there.
Yeah, yeah.
I honestly think that's the way you do it. You make a day of it.
Yeah.
You pack a board game or something that you can sort of play for fun.
I told Randy that I didn't know what to expect down there. Like, I didn't know where Franklin was. I didn't, like.
Where is it, by the way?
It's on 11th Street, exactly. Just off 35.
And I told him in my mind's eye that with the lines and stuff, that it would be somewhere between, like, kind of a long line for a movie and, I believe, Burning Man.
Yeah,
and
Burning Man, yeah.
And it was closer to a long line for a movie. back in the 80s, say.
Yeah.
But everybody seemed to know the deal. Everybody, like, almost everybody had chairs.
Yeah.
They have their own chairs that you can actually use. You just return them.
And they come by with beer and soda you can buy if you want to hang. And people are there, and people just chat with other people online. It's it's like a movie, but it's like you say you were going to see a Star Wars movie. Like, everybody's there for the same reason. There's a communal thing.
Yeah, you're definitely kind of all in the same boat. You can smell it cooking, and it smells good.
And they come by early on and ask you what you think you're going to order, so they can tell the people in the line, look, by the time you get there, you may not have any food. And they gave us a ballpark of, okay, you're right here. You'll probably get in by about 12:30. And we were in at 12:30. I was impressed.
They clearly know about how this works. They must have done it before.
Yeah.
Possibly every single day for like the last
five or 6 years. Yeah.
You know what the magical moment for me was, Randy?
Yep.
Once we got inside, of course, well, there are two magic moments there.
Yeah.
We were basically, they have that we were inside in the line, and there was a dining room in there.
Yep.
And so we were watching people eat, and it looked amazing.
Yeah, the food looked really good.
At that point, I'd worked up a good hunger.
And people had these plates of food. They had just everything on there.
Yeah. And then while we were in line, there was a group ahead of us of like about six people.
Yeah.
And the guy who was getting the meat for him gave him some burnt ends.
Yeah.
That I was like, oh, those lucky bastards.
Yep.
They got some little freebies.
Yep.
Because, I don't know, just because, I mean, they're just.
Well,
they're just
they do that. They hand those out.
Right place at the right time. Yeah. And but then we got some.
Yeah, we got up and he gave us a little chunk each, and it was just a good taster
amazing.
Yeah. And then we split. We basically got just about everything. I got sausage and brisket and pulled pork, and you got
pork ribs.
Yeah,
pulled pork and everybody got brisket.
And everybody got brisket. And that pulled pork was so good. Oh, the pork ribs were really good. They were full off the bone, delicious.
Yep. You know, I believe I took a bite or two, and Buddy was watching, and he was like, I've got to take a picture of that, which was hilarious. Like, it was apparently so delicious looking that in mid me eating it, he's like, I must film this. And so the short version is, though, it was worth it.
Yeah.
Aside from being a fun time.
Yeah.
You know, as long as you know what you're getting into.
Yeah, and I wouldn't do it every day. I wouldn't even do it every month, but every now and then.
Yeah, and we had lots of friends texting us. And, you know, honestly, we were on Facebook. So all our friends knew we were down there, and they were like, bring us food.
Yep.
And we were like, no.
And you can. I mean, if you can send an emissaries, you can get a couple extra pounds of brisket and bring it home. Yeah. But you're probably going to eat that yourself like I did.
As well you should. But we're planning, you know, we're like, we're going to do another one.
Yeah, we're definitely going to do an expedition.
Like, sometime in the next few months, we'll do it again. It was amazing. The leftovers were amazing.
Yeah.
It's
really good. It was really fun.
Yeah. A legit experience and a very Austin-y experience.
Yeah.
I feel like all Austinites who kind of like barbecue should give it a shot at some point and see if how well it suits them. And a good place to maybe get something for your out-of-town friends.
Yeah, absolutely, if they don't mind waiting in line.
Right. We thought we were going to get smashed by, like, South by Southwest people because we had forgotten.
We forgot it was starting.
It starts that day. But as it happened, it didn't seem to add onto the line that much more.
No, the line seemed about what I've seen before, so... Nick, I know you did not get Franklin this weekend, but you saw a movie.
I did. On a wild hair last night, my wife and I went and saw the new Cinderella movie. And going into this, I was not super thrilled to go see it. I mean, it's Cinderella.
Yeah,
but,
sure.
It had been getting a really good buzz, and the director, Kenneth Branagh, is actually one of my favorite directors. He's done a lot of great movies and a lot of Shakespeare movies that I've really enjoyed.
Who stars in it?
A few people that I don't really know. So Lily James plays Cinderella, which I don't know. Richard Madden plays Prince Charming.
Richard Madden, he has a football game, right?
Yes.
You actually know him. He played Robb Stark in
Game of Thrones. Oh, okay. Yeah.
And those are the two sort of main cast members, but you also have people like Kate Blanchett plays the evil stepmother,
that's fun.
She gets to really, really eat some scenery.
So was this a deconstruction kind of like Maleficent, or was it a pretty straightforward retelling?
It's actually very straightforward retelling.
Did they just expand a bit on it?
A little bit here and there, and they add some things that were just kind of fun, and Kenneth Branagh just has a really good eye for what makes a good story and how to tell it very well. So
I'm kind of curious about this one in a way because Cinderella is like one of my least favorite Disney movies and or fairy tales.
Well, it's not a huge spoiler in the sense that my wife, after it was over, she loved it more than I did. And she was like, there was no music in it. And she was missing the Cinderella music.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, and I thought that was fantastic because all the music is sort of referenced. And it's referential to it, but it's not like it's not in your face. And
was
I thought
there
it was
music in the original one.
But
that's the only one I could think of.
Yeah, but all the Disney stuff seems looms so large.
Well.
Yeah,
and but there were just some great performances by everyone. The fairy godmother as Helena Bonham Carter. she just chews it up. I mean, she's hilarious.
Nice.
And you know, there's just. Stellan Skarsgård is in it, so Kenneth Branagh actually utilized a few of the people who were in his Thor movie, and sort of had that sort of same sort of eye for scenery, because he makes like the castle very grand, and sort of the overlying area is very, just visually pleasing.
Yeah, her castle is Disney's like movie logo.
Yeah.
Like, Cinderella's castle is one of their big icons.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, yeah, I guess I forgot that's their iconic castle.
It's their iconic castle, yeah.
And, actually, I'd completely forgotten this, but the woman who plays Cinderella's mother is actually Hallie Atwell.
Oh, okay.
It's got
Hallie Atwell is Agent Carter.
Peggy Carter. Gotcha. So it's got this kind of great pedigree of actors, and I just found it to be completely pleasing, just very fun, and very much worth the experience of going to the theaters. I think your daughter will love
she
it.
She probably will. She liked Maleficent a lot. So I have a question, though.
Uh-huh.
What about Nonstops, though?
Liam Neeson's.
So
Nick and I. This is not a new movie, but
no,
Liam Neeson has his Die Hard on a Plane movie that came out like what last year? I guess
it was early last year.
Yeah, and we recently. Had you seen it before?
Oh, I saw it in theaters.
Okay, I was gonna say I just got around to it. And did you rewatch it?
Yeah, I've seen it.
Okay,
and I have not watched it yet, but I will at some point.
So I kind of watched it randomly on a whim, and
a lot of people can pretty much tell you the sort of story of any Liam Neeson movie pretty quickly. And I think that's what you feared most about going into it, that it was just going to be sort of,
he's gonna kick the ass of some terrorists.
Yeah.
But it was a little bit more intriguing than that, and yeah. I had a good time in spite of the fact that the movie has some rather crazy plot twists that are a little bit ridiculous. But
in spite of or because of?
Right.
But it's a
by the time they're happening, I was very on board.
Yeah.
It's a whodunit on a plane.
It is. It actually, if you ever happen to have seen like the old Hitchcock movie, The Lady Vanishes, or even a more recent movie like The Game.
Yeah.
Not that it follows those plot points necessarily, but what you do is you get this sort of a successive mysteries that you're like, there's no one answer that can answer all of
right,
these.
Right.
And in the meantime, you're trying to figure out, and you're looking at people suspiciously, and trying to figure out who's part of this conspiracy and who isn't. And it is pretty fun. Liam Neeson is a guy who, even though he's in these dopey movies sometimes, he's an actor who I feel is almost casually great all the time.
Yeah.
And he is in this. Like, can we say what he is? Like, yeah, or do we want to?
No, he's an air marshal.
Yeah, he's like
that's in the trailer.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm
an air marshal. I'm not trying to destroy this plane. I'm trying to save it.
That's pretty good.
But the thing is, he's not, like, the ultimate badass either.
No. In fact, he's supposed to be a guy who's got a drinking problem.
So it's old school John McClane, then.
Yeah.
Very on the ropes of sort of... people think he's maybe lost it.
Right.
He's just the right guy in the wrong place at the right time.
He's got a personal tragedy in his
background. He does have a personal tragedy.
You know what I was somewhat liking this, too, as far as, like... Adventures on a Plane sort stories, Executive Decision.
Yeah.
Which I feel is a somewhat better movie, but it's that same kind of, what kind of crazy fun can we get up to, but in a pretty serious way.
That's an underrated movie, by the way, Executive Decision. That's a
really
good movie.
I really like Executive Decision.
It's an underrated, people don't remember it.
It's got a strong cast, you know, everybody kind of knows it for the kind of the humorous thing that, you know, Steven Seagal gets killed early in it.
Yeah.
And Austin it is Travis. Funny because with the amazing name of Austin Travis.
Yeah,
I have read that he did not want that; that he was really angry that they were going to kill off this character, which only makes it better.
That makes it better.
But it had Kurt Russell, John Leguizamo,
Oliver Platt,
yeah.
B.D. Wong.
Yeah, it is a strong that had a yeah. strong ensemble cast.
Yep,
just enough, you know, just the right amount of twists and turns.
Yeah.
So the
hierarchy would be Executive Decision, just below that Nonstop, and then way below that Air Force One?
Correct.
Okay.
No, Air Force One is like that medium territory, and then you get things like Passenger 57 and Turbulence.
Fair enough. Yeah, I forgot about Turbulence.
Nick can always find new lows.
Yeah, that's right. What about Snakes on a Plane?
That may even go above Passenger 57.
I've never seen Passenger 57.
How do Snakes on a Plane compare to Air Force One? As far as entertainment value. Not talking about overall greatness.
That's kind of tough.
Pick one that you could watch right now.
Air Force One.
Okay.
There we need. That's all we need. All right.
All right, so we need to stop the podcast so we can go get Air Force One for Nick. He needs it now.
Now. Finally, we have a video game that I have been playing the hell out of, and Dave has just downloaded and started to play a little bit.
Yeah, you coerced me into it.
It's the universe coerced me into it.
Actually,
I have not been coerced.
You know, we discovered as we were talking about this separately, I was telling you about a game that was interesting me while we were on the way to Franklin. And you said, oh, that kind of reminds me of this game I've been hearing about called Helldivers.
And
you started telling me about that, and I'm like, are these the same game?
Yeah. Well, all I knew was the name.
Right.
And I knew it was called Helldivers.
The one thing I didn't know was the name.
And then you described this game, and I'm like, oh, yeah. And I'm like, I need to try that. I know I need to go and download this game, Helldivers.
And I was like, what is that? Bell.
And you're like, oh, that's it.
Yeah.
And then I went, that indeed was the game. And then a couple other friends have been talking about it, too. So basically, I downloaded it, you download it. It's on PS4 and PS3.
It's a futuristic top-down shooter that has elements in common with Starship Troopers in a sort of expanded way.
Yeah. I mean, they're also fighting, in addition to the bugs, cyborgs and this race called the Illuminates, or they're sort of a highly advanced alien race that we clearly just attacked.
Right. And see, that seems to be what they sort of took from the Starship Troopers movie. Was its sort of subversive elements, you know, from the propaganda films that'll show this, like, real overzealous patriotism.
Well, they're called Super Earth.
Yeah.
And there, yeah, it is very much a, you're the Helldivers, you're the heroes of this world, and there's definitely a sense
there was, like, some race that has, like, greater technology than you, and, like, in the little
that's Illuminates, them,
they explain it's, like, you know, they're about to learn that if you, you know, if you're you know, showing off greater technology for, than us, you're gonna face, you know, repercussions.
Yeah.
It's, you're very clearly in the wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that said, it's sort of background flavor for an action
game. For an action game. And the action is...
Does Dean do a voice or something?
Sadly, no.
There's probably somebody Dean-esque in it.
But there's... you can change up your gear. Like, as you go through levels, you'll get Arctic gear and woodland gear. And
oh, that's neat.
You can change up your look.
I've only just started playing it and done the tutorials, and you've played a lot more than I have.
And you get different guns.
Right. I mean, very early on, you can choose your weapon loadout
when
you get on.
Yep.
And one of the big things is it stratagems? Is that what they call
stratagems,
it?
Stratagems, yeah.
But what it basically amounts to is you can get drops from ships overhead by inputting, like, sort of little commands into your controller.
And it's up, up, down, right, left, start kind of thing.
Right.
But they show you. You get a little map.
Right. And there are things like, they're, you know, like, it'll do a bombing run, or it'll drop, like, a smart gun, like that gun in Aliens that auto-targets movement.
Yep.
And you have to actually, like, drop to the ground so it doesn't auto-target you because it doesn't know.
Yep.
And all sorts of other goodies. I'm sure there's all sorts of neat.
Yeah, there's lots. One of the things my son, who's been playing the hell out of it since his spring break, got, there's a mecha you get, an exosuit.
Right.
And you can get in that, and it's got this big old chain gun, and you walk around just smashing things. It's great.
That's the power suits from Starship Troopers.
They also, we haven't gotten here yet, but I see that there's an APC where you get, like, one person gets in and the other two
can
shoot. It's a team game, so you can play it solo. You can play it. It's not split screen, but you can play with up to three other players in the same room.
Or you can do online multiplayer.
And you can do multiplayer. So you can combine that.
Yeah.
Like, me and my son have been dropping in on other groups of two people.
Oh, neat.
So the two of us are playing, and two other people are playing in different remote locations, and we're all playing together as one squad. And you have objectives like going and activating a missile site, or
get the beacon up and running.
Get the beacon up and running. Set off what they call the hell bomb, mini nukes on the bug nests, where you have to set it off. You call it in. Once it's down, you activate it, and then you run like hell because it blows up the big area.
In the test portion of the game, I activated the big nuke and did not get far enough and got nuked.
Yeah, yeah. It's really fun.
Yeah, we should also mention the thing where what seems neat is when you're choosing what planets to go to and where to what front, you know, battle front you want to go to, they show you other ships, and the ships are clearly named after people who are other, like, PS3 or, in your case, PS4 players. Right?
Yeah.
And it seems like there is an actual actively evolving front.
Yeah.
We're not quite 100% sure how it works, but it seems like, you know, you're not going to necessarily be able to get to, like, the big bads and stuff like that until enough players have taken this section of the galaxy or whatever.
Right.
So there's a kind of neat interactive thing that works on a mega scale.
Yeah. For that. Yeah. Every time you take down a planet, you get a sort of points toward the community goal of unlocking a front.
Yeah.
It's very cool. It's really fun, really easy to drop in and out of, and there is sort of advancement mechanics. You get level ups, and you get ranks every time you level up, and
it's got a bit of a smart-ass subversive sense of humor.
Yeah, it's really fun. I'm really enjoying it. So
the one other thing we should say about it, and this is maybe was the barrier that I had at first, is like I didn't want to go and buy a game from the store that was going to cost me $50 or $60.
Yeah,
this is a downloadable game.
Yeah, and it's $20.
It's $20.
Yeah, so totally worth it, Nick. You should get it so we can play Helldivers. all right. That about wraps it up for us this week. We'll be back next week with more comics, games, all that kind of stuff. Until next time,
Yojo!
And that'll wrap it up for us this week. As always, you can drop us email with topic suggestions, things you want us to hear about, or just comments on the podcast at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at roguesgallery. Check us out on Facebook. Check out our website at www.roguesgallerytx.com. Check us out on Instagram at roguesgallerytx. And if you want to help us out, go over to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating and a little review. We'd very much appreciate it. And we will be back next week.